Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season 4. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcast and join me for the story behind the song.
I'm Leo Phillips, host of This Must Be the Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound, the Consequence Podcast Network. I'll say hi to all the subscribers, all the new subscribers. Thank you for hitting that button whenever that happened for you. If you haven't already given the series a rating or left a review or just said hi where you're listening from or something you liked about one of the most recent interviews, please take that moment. And if you're not a subscriber, now is that chance as well. We put out interviews multiple times throughout the week, and we'd love to keep you up to date on all of those and all of your favorite artists and what they're talking about these days. You can do that anywhere you get your favorite podcasts from, including iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, etc., etc. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Jamila Woods. She is back with a brand new record, came out a little bit earlier this year, called Legacy, Legacy. And it's got such an interesting concept to it, which she is going to tell us all about, how she intertwines her own history, her family's history, as well as the inspiration and sometimes even the biography of some of her heroes. In fact, every song on the record is named after one of those heroes. And we'll hear about tracks like Basquiat and Miles and Muddy and Octavia. She's going to give me some education on Afrofuturism, which makes the time travel nerd in me very happy. And how some of the guests fit into the narrative of this record. Nitty Scott, Saba, Nico, Seagal, The Mind, Jasmine Fire are all on the album. An album that she even includes a bibliography in the liner notes for because of all the research that she put on this. It is such a unique project. And I'm so honored to talk with Jamila about it. Talking about the album Legacy, Legacy, it's Kyle Meredith with Jamila Woods.
Hello?
I don't know how I can give you enough compliments on Legacy, because it's such a powerful, outstanding, and while I know the themes are heavy, it's a really fun record to listen to as well. You know, congratulations on everything that you've been doing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I know there is a big concept to the album. What prompted the whole idea? Where did the idea start from for you?
Well, I started with the Giovanni song kind of in a place of just trying to write new music after having toured Heaven for a while, my first album. And I teach young people in Chicago. I work at a nonprofit that does poetry with high school students. And I teach this program every summer. And one of the prompts, we teach Ego Trippin' by Nikki Giovanni a lot. And one of the prompts we do with students is to have them do like a cover of another poem and write a poem inspired by it. And I kind of decided to do the same thing, but with a song. So doing a cover of Nikki Giovanni's poem, Ego Trippin', one of my favorite poems, and trying to write that, the essence of that poem, but apply it to my own self. It's a very like self-celebratory, self-affirming poem. So kind of just writing a braggadocio song inspired by Nikki Giovanni was the first one. And then I kind of realized that it always helps me to have a prompt when I'm writing anything. And so I think I was like, okay, let me just see how many songs I can write named after people and how many different ways I can approach that idea. So I ended up kind of writing Muddy next, and then I revisited like an older song that I had started a long time ago called Baldwin. And after a while, I was just kind of like, oh, I think this could actually evolve into a project. I was initially just thinking maybe it could be an EP, something to get me writing in between, but it kind of evolved into this bigger idea that really is paying homage to artists who have influenced me and allowing me to kind of write these self-portraits of myself through the lens of each of the people.
I got to say, in an era where it seems like everything's done, I can't name another time where this has been specifically done like this. Like, I think you came up with an original, unique idea, which is...
Thank you.
Yeah, sort of incredible, I feel like, these days. So, as you're explaining, you have these heroes in mind, but the songs aren't about them exactly, right? I mean, they're at the basis, they're still about you, or how did that work?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a combination, because whenever I look at an artist, I'm partially seeing, you know, the parts of themselves that were public or were in their art or in their writing, but I'm also partially like kind of projecting what I need to get from them or what I relate to them based on my experiences. So it's kind of this idea of, like, for example, Eartha Kitt, there's that viral video of her kind of from the documentary where she's talking about how she doesn't want to compromise in relationships. And so for that song, I was kind of like, wow, that's such a powerful idea. Let me just like borrow that energy and apply it to my life right now. And as if like I had just sat with her as a kid and she'd given me all this advice about love and relationships. And now I'm like walking out the door like, okay, this is my mindset for today. So if that kind of makes sense, it's kind of like a really cool way to kind of sit with the spirit of each of the artists and thinkers and really think about like, what have they given me? And I didn't want to do it the same way every time too, because that's another thing with like coming from a poetry background. We always say like, you don't always have to enter a poem through the front door. So you don't always have to like have the same approach to telling a story. And so for one song, like Giovanni could be a cover for the Eartha song. It's kind of like having that spirit on my shoulder as I'm writing. For the Miles song, it was almost like I was trying to write almost like a persona, like if I was taking on his voice and how he spoke about like his art. And then for Basquiat, like I watched a lot of interviews, so sometimes it was inspired by a quote that I heard people say in interviews. So it's definitely a combination, but very rooted. The thing that I wanted to make sure is that I was having an authentic connection to the person, so that hopefully that helped the songs feel more like they had more depth to them, to just being like about the person.
And one of the things I really love about the record is without knowing you personally, without knowing your family's history, when you are talking about family history, it's almost a mystery if you're talking about your own or if you're talking about the artist or if it's an intertwining of the story. I mean, it's really well done in that way.
Thank you.
Is there a story that also goes along with the music? Like a song like Basquiat, you know, it's like some of the music almost sounds like what I would imagine his paintings would sound like. Or if you're taking on a song and calling it Miles Davis, do you try, or calling it Miles, but do you try to represent that in the music as well?
That's a good question. So it varies throughout the project, but Basquiat is one of my favorites because it was really, my band was sound checking for this festival and they started playing essentially Basquiat, like the first half, like how that kind of like jazzy, like bass part, they were playing that. And I just started voice recording it. And instantly I heard the melody in my head, the kind of hook, like, are you mad? Yes, I'm mad. I didn't know the words yet, but I was kind of like singing that melody in my head. And then it wasn't until I watched the Basquiat interview and I was like, that's what it is. It was almost like the song came to me before I even knew what it was meant to be about. And I do think that kind of reminds me of in videos I would see of how Basquiat created. He'd have like the TV playing, the radio playing, a bunch of stuff around him. And that's kind of how I feel like that's how my brain works sometimes. It's just like needing all of this, you're collecting all these things and having all the stimulus around you and then somehow synthesizing it into something that is cohesive. So that was a really organic way that that came together. And then we ended up sampling the first half of the song in an MPC machine later to make the second half when the beat changes. So that one was kind of just like organic that way. And sometimes it would be more intentional. Like for Octavia, we spent a whole day, me and the producer, Slot A, we sat down and we were like, okay, you know, he didn't know that much about her. So I was telling about her science fiction writing, her Afrofuturism kind of ideas. And I was like, I want this song to sound like outer space. And so he created the beat with that in mind. And sometimes I think you can really hear that, like on Sun Ra, it was a similar thing. And Miles, it was kind of the opposite. He had that beat already made and it just, the energy of it, even though there's no trumpet in it or anything, it's not really jazzy per se. It was just kind of the energy, that just kind of badass energy of the drum beat that reminded me of Miles Davis.
No, it's absolutely there. Like Muddy, though, I mean, am I hearing right? I mean, that feels like a blues riff sort of going on, you know, kind of like a compromised blues riff.
Again, yeah, that was one that was already made, and it reminded me of Muddy, even though I thought that was a guitar in the beat, but it's actually, there's no guitar on that whole song. It's a bass being played, so it's kind of funny.
Does Muddy Waters mean something extra being from Chicago?
Yeah, I actually, that song, I was kind of given the assignment to write a cover of a poem about Muddy Waters, and this whole book of poems about Chicago by Kevin Koval. And so, yeah, he was going to cover one of my songs and I covered one of his poems. And so that's how I came across. I always knew about Muddy Waters, but I didn't know about that particular moment when he came to Chicago and, you know, he was playing in these bars and people would be talking loud. And that's when he first started playing electric guitar because he wanted his music to be heard over people. And that's where that first line, like, people won't shut up, come from. So, yeah, I think it was a cool process for me to learn more about him through writing the song and then also watching interviews with him talking about the ways his music was appropriated and the ways that kind of issues that are still going on today in music, to hear him articulating those same things about blues and, you know, in a whole different time period was really impactful to me.
And you did so much research in this that you included a bibliography in the liner notes.
Like, yes, I wanted to just, I always loved like the process of listening to music and hearing a name or hearing something referenced that I didn't know and looking it up. Like before, I remember like when the Genius website first came out, I was like, this is amazing because this is like all I spend my time doing. And so I thought it would be cool to include, you know, the things that inspired me, to almost give that extra kind of cherry or that extra like treasure hunt for people who care about that.
I mean, I grew up being the only one of my friends who would spend time reading the liner notes. And And these days I still do for similar reasons. I mean, although I've been around in the business long enough now where part of me is also hoping that I'll see someone that I recognize, you know, in the thank yous or something like that. But man, if any of my favorite artists had did that back in the day, I think I just would have, I would never have come out of my room, because talk about the rabbit holes that you fall down.
Yeah.
It's such a cool idea. You mentioned Afrofuturism, and I'll admit, I was not familiar with that term. And I was wondering if you could actually talk about what that is a little bit, because it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a really vast concept, and I think there's a lot of different ways I think you could define it. But to me, I think about artists like Sun Ra and Octavia Butler and the ways in which for Black people, it's a pretty revolutionary act to imagine us in the future and space, and kind of the historical absence of Black people in science fiction. It almost implies, well, you're not going to survive to the future, so there's no vision for you there. And so it's kind of this way of thinking and this way of creating that imagines Black people in the future, but also allows you to kind of reimagine the past. And so Octavia Butler has this amazing book called Kindred, where it's all about this modern day Black woman who somehow finds this time portal in her living room and falls back in time into slavery, where she's like an enslaved woman and enslaved by the same family who owned her ancestors. And she has to kind of figure out how to like navigate her way out of that. And so it's kind of this idea of like playing with time and playing with imagination through the lens of Black people and our experiences, and kind of, you know, allowing us to have a vast existence than just this present moment.
And with that, I mean, maybe it's not lost on you, but you really, with talking about, you know, family history and what you were just saying there, I mean, this album encompasses all of space and time in that way. I mean, almost literally.
Yeah, definitely thinking a lot about time and thinking a lot about, again, like with the muddy parallel, and even someone like Zora Neale Hurston, who I think you were saying some songs maybe sound like you don't know if I'm talking about me or about them. And like, I really did find a lot of common threads. And so like, you know, someone like Zora, who wrote a lot about being a Black person, often in an all white environment, like I super related to that growing up in the neighborhood that I grew up in Chicago, which was like, my family was one of the only Black families. And so there's this way where, yeah, it did kind of feel like reaching through time to find like these people who I was feeling like I was on the same wavelength as them, even though in a very different kind of context.
So having guests on a record like this, Nidhi Scott, Saba, do you have a conversation with them about, you know, when they take to the mic, like, hey, here's the idea, here's the concept, how do they fit into it in the way that you do you need them to fit into it?
Yeah, I think one of the things was I was just super familiar with pretty much all of their work beforehand. So it was like, I knew I could just trust whatever it was that they wanted to bring to the song already. Like, yeah, I did give them, like, I remember like with Saba, like I wrote down, this is the interview I watched with Basquiat. Like, this is where I related to it. Here's the link. You can watch it. But I really want you to say whatever you have to say, like in relation to that, or like we're having a conversation about this thing that we just watch that we just found. And so it was pretty much like, and a lot of it, like I wasn't there, like I kind of would send them like kind of the note about like what inspired me and kind of let them do their thing. And so it kind of really happened that I think because I kind of intentionally chose them thinking that they might relate to the subject, it didn't really feel forced, at least to me at all, because it just felt like, oh, you know, they're going to add their perspective, and it's just going to make it that much richer.
And it fits in so perfectly. I mean, it honestly does.
Yeah.
Jamila, again, congratulations, Legacy, Legacy. I'm a huge fan of it. We love it around here at WFBK too. And man, I can't, you know, wait to see what comes next. I'm a greedy fan at this point. So
thank you so much for the support. I really appreciate that.
Anytime, every time. Thank you so much too. And have a great day and take care.
All right, you too. Right, bye.
My thanks to Jamila Woods. Again, the new record is called Legacy, Legacy. Now, back in 2017, Jamila had just released her album called Heaven and had signed to the record Jack Jaguar. That's the first time we caught up to talk about that record, collaborating with Chance the Rapper, the single Holy, her soul background, falling in love with poetry, and giving back to the community that had already given her so much. Part two of Kyle Meredith with Jamila Woods.
Hello.
I kind of like to start by clearing up a little bit. I know you just signed to Jack Jaguar, one of my favorite labels, so congratulations to that. And they're going to be...
Thank you.
How's it happening? Are they going to be re-releasing Heaven, and is Holy a part of that, or is it on its own?
Yeah, so we are going to be re-releasing Heaven this summer, and Holy is a part of it. Yeah, there's going to be two different versions, the ones that we just released, the original one, and then kind of a reprised version. So I'm really excited for it to come out again and hopefully have an even wider audience this time.
Yeah, which is crazy to think of, especially after all the accolades you got at the end of 2016, because, you know, for something that just existed basically on, like, SoundCloud, that thing was seemed to be everywhere.
Yeah, it's exciting to think of, you know, I put it out with Close Sessions, which is a local Chicago label, and it's a really cool partnership that we have now with Jag Jaguar, and it's just going to hopefully reach even more people than it did before.
As far as your music goes, you know, one of the first things I guess I noticed and was impressed, and I could put this on a lot of the Chicago scene that I'm hearing right now, and I feel like that's always part of your story, is the bigger scene in itself, because what I hear is, like, I don't know, it seems like you're doubling down on putting soul back into hip hop. I hear that from a lot of folks up there, and even with you, there's this. I don't know. It feels like there's as much spiritualism, both personal and maybe faith-based, as there is activism. Like, where does it all come from? And am I accurate on that? Do you see it as that way as well?
I think I definitely hear what you're saying, and I think there's definitely a tradition of soul music in Chicago, and how that kind of, even in previous, you know, I mean, current hip-hop artists from Chicago, it's kind of been a theme. You know, Kanye West used a lot of soul and gospel influence and Common, and it's, I think, a very Chicago thing. But for me, I think all those things you're saying, like soul, like my faith background, activism, to me, they kind of come from coming up doing poetry. And I think poetry was what kind of gave me, it allowed me to know what to write about, whether I'm writing a poem or a song. I think I was kind of introduced to the idea that everyone has a story worth telling, and there's no story too boring or too kind of disparate to make sense. And so when I started doing poetry in high school, it kind of empowered me to trust in my voice, not only as a poet, but as a singer. And I think ever since then, it made sense to me to use, like, elements of hip-hop, like sampling or kind of making allusions, and to kind of bring those elements into my songwriting. And so it's not really, I think it's definitely using hip hop elements, and in that sense, it makes sense, that because hip hop is all about kind of recontextualizing things. And so it makes sense to have gospel next to, like, a reference from an Incubus song next to Afrofuturistic kind of lyrics. So yeah, hopefully that answers your question.
It does. And by the way, that's been the other fun part of listening to your music, is finding those little, they're not really hidden gems in there, but like the Incubus reference, obviously the Cure, you know.
Yeah. Stuff,
like, I don't know if that's, you know, just a natural thing that comes out of you and you go with it, or if you thought to yourself, I'm really going to have fun with this and bring in these other elements as you were talking about.
Yeah, I think it's partially just for me, I'm having fun with myself, I guess, and I definitely love that, you know, when people are kind of excited to kind of Easter egg hunt through the album to see what references they recognize. And to me, it kind of feels like, also thinking of hip-hop as like a collage art form, like, what am I bringing into a new song with me that kind of tells something about who I am in that sense? Like, I'm adding to a collage, but I'm also bringing in something that is important to me or says something about who I am.
And I get that from the album too, because there is definitely the activism and the bigger picture stuff that you're talking about on the record, but a lot of this is about self-empowerment. probably as much for you as, you know, hopefully to other people listening to it.
Yeah, that's definitely a big part of it. It was a lot about thinking about love and kind of going deeper than maybe what I was taught love was, you know, kind of thinking about self-love and love of your community and things like that, and hoping that comes across in the different songs.
The poetry part of things, what drew you to poetry in the first place? That's natural for some people, but not for everyone.
Yeah, it was actually kind of by accident. There's an after-school program in Chicago, and it was like a really kind of prestigious, not prestigious, but like popular program, because it paid you to do art after school and in the summer. And I applied for the music program, and I didn't get into that one. I got put into the poetry one. And so at first I was kind of upset, but I ended up falling in love with it. And I think it was, you know, I had grew up singing in choirs and not really thinking I had the type of voice that could be a solo voice or could be a solo artist. And it was really, like I said, through poetry that I realized that it's not about focusing on what you don't have or like the stories that you can't tell. But, you know, if you spend all your time doing that, you'll never realize what you do have and what you can do with your voice and the stories that you do have. So that was really that program. And then after that, staying involved in poetry communities is how I became empowered as an artist, and also how I met a bunch of collaborators. And because I think in Chicago, especially the poetry and music community, poetry and hip hop communities are very overlapping.
Yeah. And is that what drove you to start or be a part of? Is it a collective? Is it a program that with poetry?
Yeah, Young Chicago Authored. It's a nonprofit organization. I work there now. And we run the largest youth poetry festival in the world called Louder Than a Bomb. And it's actually spread around the country also. And I think it's in Chicago, we run an open mic every week. And it's kind of a hub for artists who want to kind of meet each other and just hear new work and get inspired. And that's definitely where I spent a lot of time. That's where I did my first ever musical performance. And it's a really good audience because it's a very listening audience. And I think that's something about my music, too, is I really, coming from a poetry background, care about the lyrics and kind of the storytelling that's happening through the words. And I like performing at poetry spaces sometimes because of that, how people are really listening for the words and the lyrics of what I'm saying.
It's very traditional folk artist type of description right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess that's the other part that I'm sort of notice about what all's going on up there is that you have these great musicians, yourself included, obviously, you know, whether you call it a scene or not, want to, but any other time, you know, when you have those around the country and they happen here and there and a bunch of people, you know, start doing great things, and it's usually just about the music. And here I see that you all are all seeming to give back. You're putting as much back into the community as you're getting. And that's completely respectable.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come from?
That's a good question. I think for me, it comes from even, you know, how I found my first kind of transformative poetic experience at YCA, Young Chicago Authors. I knew I wanted to go back and work there even before I knew really that, you know, I was doing music or anything like that. I think a lot of Chicago and especially artists have these experiences where these organizations or these communities really influence us, and there's really no industry in Chicago. There's no kind of, you know, any day the mayor could change his mind about something and then a program's gone. So it's kind of this idea that we have to sustain ourselves. And so I think that is, at least for me, where it comes from, the idea of wanting to give back and wanting to not be, you know, not be like a random happening of like, oh, these people are really making it out of Chicago right now. That's not going to continue to happen unless we invest in these community spaces and artistic spaces and youth arts education spaces that make it possible for artists to really, you know, kind of harness their voices and be successful as artists.
That's beautiful. And I hope that catches and spreads, because you know, the old adage and nearly cliche line of there's no more important time than now. But I feel that more than ever, that there's no more important time than now, that people start picking up, you know, that torch and running with it the way you guys have.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. The rest of the year, so the album gets re-released this summer, as you're saying. You seem to be always popping up on other folks' tracks. Is there going to be more of that as well?
Yeah, I think so. I think, there's a really great rapper named Joseph Chilliam. I don't know if you know Saba, but it's his brother, and he's putting out a project, and I have a song with him. Yeah, so there's always more collaborations coming, and also working on my own new music, too.
With that, I mean, the album is a year old. Are you already, I would guess, working on the next one?
Yeah, definitely writing more. Definitely writing more things, and also working on learning more elements of production, too, so I can kind of be on both sides of that for the next album. But yeah, I'm still working with a lot of the same producers who are on Heaven, like Odd Couple and D-Lily, and working with my sister, Ayanna Woods, who produced one of the songs, too, so definitely working on new stuff.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing it all, and thanks again for taking the time today. I love what you're doing out there. Congratulations and good luck.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
You too. Take care.
Thanks. You too.
Right. Bye.
Bye.
Jamila Woods, that one's back from a 2017 interview talking about her debut record called Heaven. Of course, again, the new record is called Legacy Legacy, and it's out now. And that'll do it for this edition. Before you get out of here, again, if you're already a subscriber, hey, give the series a rating or leave a review or just say hi in a comment box somewhere. Tell me where you're listening from or what you dug about the interview or any questions you might have. And if you're not a subscriber, now is your opportunity. Hit the subscribe button wherever you get your favorite podcasts from, including iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and all the rest of them. After that, you can head to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of new songs, anniversary celebrations, music news, interview clips, and so much more. That's WFPK.org, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. ConsequenceOfSound.net has your music and film news. You can also find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith and Facebook /Kyle Meredith. That does it for another edition. Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offering, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.